Hello, VetBlast podcast listeners. Did you know that you can earn 0.25 CE credits with this podcast? After listening to this podcast, head on over to dvm360.com/flex and then sign in or register for a free account. Then select the podcast and follow the online prompts to claim your CE.
Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
Hey everyone, we're going to be talking about breaking down behavioral barriers to feline wellness care. That's right. And joining me is the one and only board certified behaviorist, Dr. Megan Herron. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. So good to hear from you. We want to really get into this great conversation about our cats. So I'm excited to learn more about it. This content is sponsored by Credelio Cat
and Lodaliner.
And Elanco is pleased to sponsor this wonderful board certified behaviorist, Dr. Herron, as she shares her insights on feline wellness care and a little bit of information about our wonderful colleague here. Dr. Herron is the Senior Director of Behavioral Medicine, Education, and Outreach at GG's, a shelter organization dedicated to improving the lives of shelter dogs. Prior to her current position, she spent over a decade as an associate professor in the Department of Veterinary Clinical Sciences as head of the Behavioral Medicine Service at The Ohio State University's Veterinary Medical Center. She graduated from The Ohio State University College of Veterinary Medicine, became board certified as a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Behavior after completing a residency at the University of Pennsylvania School of Veterinary Medicine. As a published author and seasoned international speaker, she has given lectures and seminars on animal behavior around the United States, Canada, Europe, and Australia. Dr. Herron is the lead editor on the book Decoding Your Cat, the long-anticipated sequel to Decoding Your Dog, where the ultimate experts from the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists explain common cat and dog behaviors and reveal how to prevent and change those unwanted ones. Which reminds me, I have to get that book, by the way. So thank you for the reminder.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, the summer's almost over. You got to get your last summer read in there.
I know. I remember seeing that. I was like, I got to get this book. It's so good. We got a lot to unpack here, and I'm very excited about it. So let's talk about the wellness care. And we know that wellness care encompasses several areas in our profession. We got veterinary wellness, visits, plus the exams, or whatever you want to call them, and vaccinations, parasite protection. So what does the data tell us about cats and the wellness care that they're receiving, or I should say maybe not receiving?
Yeah. I mean, sadly, you know, the recent statistics that came out of the AVMA's veterinary usage study shows us that cats are, they're just not making it to the vet, you know, unless it's an absolute emergency. It's really, really sad. So when you talk about even basic care, I mean, some of the studies they did, so they did this, you know, wide, you know, nationwide study of cat owning populations and households, and it was alarming, you know, how few of them were actually making it to the vet. Some of the quotes from this study when they did their small groups were, well, gosh, if it was a minor problem, I guess I'd wonder if the stress of the visit would be more harmful than a wait and see approach. Like, that's terrible, right? Let's wait and see. And sometimes waiting and see, your cat's not going to make it that long. So if we think for issues or even urgent problems, people are hesitant to visit their veterinarian, they're not making it there for their wellness care. So we've got some big time barriers there, you know, getting these cats their preventive care, their annual vaccines, and even just to have a veterinarian's hands on an animal, you know, to make sure that they're progressing the way they should.
Yeah, you know, I think we tend to think that we often assume that finances are the barrier to provision of veterinary care, but that seems to not be the case. Interesting. Is that, do you think that's the primary barrier, or is it the other barriers that you were just talking about?
Yeah, well, so according to some of these focus groups, they perceive stress of not just the visit itself, but getting to the vet clinic, right? The stress of getting that cat in the carrier, yeah, getting them into the car. I mean, how many times have you had a client call to say, sorry, doc, can't come in today, got the carrier out, and my cat has been nowhere to be found for the last, you know, 5 hours. And so the barriers of actually getting to the clinic, and then the stress of being there. And that in this study group, majority, up to 90%, felt like they perceived the stress that they perceived their cat was going to go through was the number one barrier to getting their cat to the veterinarian. So the stress they perceived their cat was going to go throughout the vet, the stress they felt of getting their cat to the vet were higher. They were ranked as larger barriers than cost. That's amazing to me. I mean, we've got some work to do to really, really solve this issue.
You really do. I even think of the phone calls that I would get. It's like, Doc, I finally got her in the cat carrier. And it's like 8 hours later.
Yes, can I get there? Find, can like, I come now?
Right?
Yes. And you usually said yes because you knew there wasn't a chance you're going to see that cat for months. So
absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, it's frustrating all around. But so you did mention feline stress and the pet parent stress related to the veterinary visit, of course, that they are significant barriers to the feline wellness care. So as a behaviorist, I'm curious, what are some of the top tips to improve the cat and pet owner experience with the veterinary visit?
Yeah. So I kind of feel like it boils down to three main things. The first is, you know, client education and buy-in, which is going to come with some good communication skills and really helping them understand why the veterinarian is there, not just for emergencies, but for wellness care, and how we can really improve and increase the quality and quantity. But they're going to live longer if they're getting wellness care, and they're going to live better. So really helping communicate that to have our client buy-in. And then we have to work on mitigating those stressors of getting the cats to the clinic, as well as their whole experience from lobby to exit, of trying to mitigate and make that as least stressful as possible. And then the third thing really is, how do we help our pet parents provide at-home wellness care in a stress-free manner as possible? Because that's another barrier of why they're not wanting to give that, maybe that monthly flea and tick product, or why they're not wanting to provide a medication for a minor or even major illness. It's a barrier to them. So helping them, give them the tools to be able to provide that at home, I think, is the third tenet I tend to talk about.
Yeah. And I think of even before they even get into the vet, you know, room or whatnot, the exam, and when the vet hasn't even done anything, I feel like they might be getting revved up upon their arrival. So like, how can we improve their arrival attitude?
Oh, yes. I feel like I've said this myself before, but how many of our clients say to us, gosh, Doc, he's such a nice cat at home. I don't know why he's acting this way, right? Where this cat is hissing at us, swatting at us, or sometimes worse, a complete statue, just frozen in absolute fear. These cats they're sensitive to external stressors like this. You know, in the safety of their home or their backyard, they might be this stealthy predator, but you put them out in the world, you put them in a clinic with dogs, you know, they become the prey. And so they're going to go into that fight, flight, freeze, or fidget mode pretty quickly. And I like to tell this story of when I used to run the handling labs for veterinary students when I was at Ohio State. We wanted veterinary students to have hands-on actual cats and learn how to, you know, provide low-stress physical exams and learn how to do the physical exam itself. And so we would recruit the best of the vet's cats. So, you know, students or faculty members who had cats that were very docile, that loved people, that were very food motivated. And this one year we got the cats out, went to handle them, and they were all hissing at us. They were all hiding from us, and we could barely touch the cats. So there was no learning that was going to happen other than reading fearful body language very well. And it turned out that where these cats were housed, there had been a dog in an adjacent ward barking the previous 2 hours. And just that stress affected all of them. All of these cats are historically docile, very compliant, loved to interact with people, had no problems with physical exams. Just that environmental stressor was enough to set them all over the edge, and they couldn't be touched. So imagine our cats that aren't used to a carrier, that aren't used to being in a vehicle, and then they're in a lobby with barking dogs, or let alone a mascot cat coming up and approaching the front of their carrier in the, you know, near the safety of their person. And then we have to get them out of the carrier and putting hands all over them, you know, and the basics of what we do in our exam are inherently stressful if we don't make a huge effort to try to mitigate them.
And what about the pet parent? Is it helpful for the pet parent to be there during the exam? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Does it help them emotionally, the cat?
Sure. I mean, there are exceptions to every rule, and every cat is an individual. Right. Some are going to do better in different ways. But what some of the research is showing us, so in 2021, 2022, they looked at both for dogs and for cats, you know, location of the exam, as well as having that familiar person present and looking at the stress levels of the cats. And actually, in the majority of these cats, stress levels were much lower if the exam was performed in a quiet location and they had their familiar person present with them. So those two factors seem to be very helpful in mitigating stress for most cats. Granted, there's always exceptions, but what we seem to find is, well, a lot of us want to just especially during the pandemic. Like, we whisk them away, we do curbside. It feels like we can go very efficiently, but I think we're actually putting that cat through a lot of stress, as well as the pet parent. So these visits were perceived as less stressful because they weren't blind. They knew what was happening and they could be an active participant in their pet's wellness care. I think it also helps them really see the importance of it, right? If they are not witnessing, you know, the thorough examination we're doing, all the care that's going into the wellness of their cat, they're just sitting in their car waiting for their cat to be popped back to them. I don't know that they're gaining as much of a perception of the value that they're getting from that visit either.
Yeah, I think it's noticeable for me too, just from even for the cat parents, the want to be more compliant and consent to treatment when they were in the exam room versus when they were curbside was so drastic.
Right? Oh, sure.
Because they could see the value with what you're showing them, or dental disease or heart, whatever that is. I just think, yeah, having them there is very helpful. And, you know, I know we use a lot of food in the veterinary hospitals to like entice the dogs, at least, to overcome any clinic anxiety. So does it also work with cats?
Oh, yes. I think with cats, you just, and dogs too, you just have to find their currency, right? And, you know, right. I'm not a big fan of, you know, completely fasting our kitties. It's certainly not a safe thing to do, particularly for a prolonged period of time, but potentially maybe a smaller portion of breakfast. And then talking to our pet parents about what does their cat love? What's their currency? You know, for some cats, that's meat. So it's bits of canned chicken or canned tuna. I find that the poultry flavored baby foods are really appealing to cats. Amazingly, just as disgusting as that sounds and probably unhealthy for cats, but okay for just this one thing, things like Cheese Whiz or Easy Cheese. I can remember, you know, vaccinating kittens with just a little bit of Cheese Whiz smeared on a table and they're just licking it up voraciously. You know, I think now that we're doing more the distal limb vaccinations, I think it's more challenging. It's more uncomfortable for them, which, you know, brings to mind actually one of Elanco's other products, the Feel Ultra. They're ultra vaccines, which are half the volume of your traditional vaccines. And so for these cats, when you're dealing particularly with a small cat or a kitten with a very small subcutaneous space where we're trying to provide this injection, having it be half the volume is tremendously less stressful for these kitties. So I'm a big fan of that product for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, so we speak about treats, you know, I also think of auditory and olfactory environments for cats. So what are some of the things that is best for our cats for auditory and olfactory?
Yeah, well, I just kind of, you know, sit in a room as though you're a cat. You know, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you smelling? What are you feeling? And try to think of it from their perspective. And this is an interesting thing to do in a very busy emergency room, right? Because it's hectic. It's crazy. And we as a clinician might be hyper-focusing on the patient right in front of us. And some of us have a better ability than others to kind of block out all the external stimuli and all the craziness going on. From a cat, particularly their point of view, again, they're feeling like this prey species here. They're feeling like everything around them is a threat. They aren't missing a thing. Right. And so think about the bright lights that they're seeing. Cats have that reflective surface on the back of their retina called the tapetum, which allows them to bounce light, which means they see very well in low light situations. But what that also means is that they perceive highlight situations much more brightly too. So what might be normal lighting for us might actually be stressfully bright from a cat's point of view. And so if we can have dimmers to dim the lights and then used focus light, if there's something particular we need to look at, so those overhead lights or pen lights that we can use if we need focus, particularly for a cat that's stressful. Cats having the ability to feel hidden, so covering their eyes, whether it's with a towel or with their hands, or often what I would tend to do or have my assistant do is allow that cat, if I'm examining their, you know, their latter half, or I'm ausculting them or doing an abdominal palpation, I'm going to allow that cat to hide its head in the crook of somebody's arm, right? So they feel like, okay, I'm hidden. They actually did a study with laboratory cats where they had the ability to feel concealed. Their stress levels went way down compared to cats that couldn't. And so it's kind of like that, okay, I can't see you, you can't see me, you can't get me, you know, sort of thought. But, you know, dimming the lights, allowing them to hide their head is one thing. But auditorily, barking dogs, as I mentioned before, are a huge stressor to cats. So if you have the luxury of having a separate waiting area for cats, that's going to be super helpful. The other option is to just allow cats to stay in the comfort of their car with their pet parent until it's time for their exam. And then we escort them basically from the parking lot, cover that carrier and get them directly to the exam room. Do not pass go. They go directly to exam room to minimize the stressors of the smells and the sounds, particularly of dogs. And then there's also auditory stimuli we can add to our exam room. So we've got research behind classical music. So through a cat's ear is one combination of, it's called psychoacoustically designed for cats. So there's both through a dog's ear and through a cat's ear, very similar. Basically, it's playing music at a slower tempo than you might be used to, with fewer instruments playing at a time and no big drum beats or cymbal crashes. And so it's really designed to not be startling and to really help create a soothing environment. And there's plenty of research for primates and humans. So I think the people in the room and the pet parents can also be soothed by playing classical music, such as through a cat's ear. There's other classical music out there. You just want to be careful of you know, big cymbal crashes. And, you know, 1812 Overture tends not to be super relaxing for most cats.
Right.
And then also thinking at buffering sound. So white noise machines, particularly if you're not able to separate cats from dogs, you know, having a white noise machine right at the door to help just create a sound buffer, that shh.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's white noise, brown noise, pink noise, you know, you pick your buffer, but that can be very helpful at modifying what sound gets in, you know, kind of creating this sort of sensory deprivation chamber of comfort in your exam room.
And cat parents love that, because just what we were just talking about earlier, of the stress of the cat parents, knowing that they're going to have feline friendly hours, and it doesn't have to be long, but just enough to, you know, allocate it to these kinds of exams that we're talking about. You know, we're providing them like nice sounds and smells are good. No dogs are around. We have dimmer lights in the exam rooms, and we do nice warm towels. And I think it's been very noticeable doing something that subtle.
And awesome. It creates this sort of spa experience, right? For the pet parent. Like, you enter the spa, you get a warm robe, right. You hear classical music playing, you know, next thing we'll be serving wine, but no, kidding.
Yeah. But the cat parents said the same thing. The cat parents like, I want to come here. It's nice and comfortable and quiet. And so it's really soothing. Yeah. So
the warm towel, I love the warm towel idea. I think that's great. And also, you know, to make that even better, I'm a big fan of spraying the feel away pheromones on those warm towels, just because it creates, you know, we've got good research behind feel away helping cats, you know, at least return to eating when they're hospitalized. You know, another thing is allowing them to stay in their own carrier, like having that as part of the exam.
Yeah.
So I usually, you know, whether it's a sleepy pod, whether it's a carrier that you can unscrew and take the top off, I'm typically a fan for most cats of that style, because we're able to allow them to stay inside that familiar bottom of that carrier and feel like I'm at home. It smells like me. And then we can add that warm towel that's been spritzed with Feel Away, whether it's Feel Away Classic or Feel Away Optimum. I think Steve is kind of switching towards the Feel Away Optimum as their new feline pheromone complex. But just to help try to message as much as possible that we can be trusted and that this is a safe place for them.
The carrier idea is such a huge thing. I know that sometimes they'll say they leave it out the day before, the night before, but now to your point, they have these carriers that are literally like furniture for cats.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so you just like the sleepy pod that you're talking about. I love that, because it just unzips and you can do your whole physical right there, which is great.
Absolutely.
So they just feel like they're being transported from one area to the other. So it's awesome. And one final moment on this, and then I want to transition over to talking about, you know, parasite control, but the scruffing, talk to me a little bit about that and how to handle cats. Is it scruffing, no scruffing, towel wraps? Like what are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think we've really come a long way from that. And it used to be scruff and stretch was just standard. That's what we did every time. Yeah. That's how we restrained them, because it immobilized them in a lot of cases. And it allowed us to do our work more efficiently. I think what we're recognizing is it's pretty jarring and alarming for cats to be scruffed, particularly adult cats. They don't have that same reflex where they go sort of catatonic like a kitten might. But even then, I think using a scruff in a kitten, the way we tend to do it tends to be very stressful for them. And we don't need it. We don't need to immobilize our patients. We want them to be willing participants. If we can start as kittens to have them eating, to be having a positive emotional association with everything we're doing. You know, we're not letting them touch cold, slippery floors. They're in the comfort of their own carrier. They've got this warm towel spritz with feel away. I want to see cats purring and bunting and being happy so that while they're eating, we can do their physical exam, eat a little more. We can provide their wellness vaccines, particularly if we're using the Truefel Ultra Elanco vaccines at half the volume. They're not going to feel as much discomfort from that vaccine as it is. There's so much we can do to mitigate this and help them make this a much less stressful experience.
Absolutely. I love it. Thank you for sharing all these great tips. That's fantastic. And so let's talk a little bit about flea and tick prevention in our kitty friends. So we know wellness care extends into the home when we consider owner administration of parasite protection against common parasites such as fleas and ticks in between the veterinary visits. So as a behaviorist, what are some considerations about routine parasite protection should we be thinking about?
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes right to my third tenet is that we want our pet parents to feel good about providing wellness care at home. And so this great new product for cats, Credelio Cat, is an oral parasiticide. So for flea and ticks for cats, it's monthly, and it's the first oral parasiticide for cats. So we have options for dogs out there, but for cats, we're limited. And I think before, maybe as clinicians thought, oh, every cat topical is just easier. It's quick, it's done because cats hate it. So we can be fast with it. But I can speak for my own cats that I think is much more stressful. Cats are fastidious groomers, right? We always put it between their shoulder blades where they can't reach it. So imagine, you know, it's literally making their skin crawl and they can't groom it. They can't get to it. It can be very stressful for a lot of cats. And I have a lot of clients tell me that they get the wrapper out to provide their monthly prevention and the cat's disappearing because they have a negative association already with that sound. And so they're bolting, they're running away. It's like the opposite of the can opener, right? They hear, they come running and they hear the sound of the parasiticide and they're running. But what Credelio Cat has done is given cats a way to be willing participants in their monthly wellness care. And so I do not like to talk or plug a product unless I've tried it true myself. And so I started this shortly after it came out with both of my cats, one of whom won't eat anything. And so we didn't talk about gabapentin earlier, but gabapentin has been a game changer for feline wellness visits. So giving gabapentin the night before, as well as the morning of a visit, has dramatically lowered feline stress and helps cats be more calm, more at ease, and just be more compliant with their entire exam experience. And we tote gabapentin not only because of its effectiveness, but also because it's a fairly tasteless substance. So you can hide it in food. Most cats will eat it. I've had patients that just eat the capsule, no problem. Well, I've got one of those cats that wouldn't even eat gabapentin. So I could hide it in all her favorite foods. And she's like, no, you poison that. I'm not touching it. And so I was very skeptical about Credelio. Whereas my other cat is a big hawk. He'll eat anything. He will eat anything you put in front of him, no problem. And so I have videos of these. So I gave it to both of them. And my cat that won't even eat food with gabapentin, she ate it plain. I didn't even have to cover it with pill pockets, with anything. She just ate it. And she has consistently for the last 5 months, just give it to her. She comes running, she eats it, no problem. Now, my other cat is funny. I need to cover it. He likes the Covetrus pill pals. That's his favorite little like salad dressing, we call it for his little pill, but he eats it right up, no problem. And it's just, I didn't even realize the stress that I was feeling personally as a veterinary behaviorist, you know, because I provide wellness care to my cats. I want them to have monthly flea and tick. And so to not have to chase them around or worry about, you know, because they, even with giving them food and putting that on, I could just tell it was uncomfortable on your skin. So I'm a big proponent for Credelio Cat, this oral parasiticide option. And what I'm finding is that every month, I'm closer to the first of the month, whereas I would find myself before, it's the second, it's the third, creeping towards the middle of the month before I'm getting that parasiticide on them. And I'm finding I'm much better at getting it that first of the month. My cats are getting it because I'm not stressed about it. And I don't think I ever realized that I was being stressed about it. So if I'm being stressed about it, imagine our pet parents, and for them who may not even recognize the importance of it, I can see it getting shoved in a drawer and never used. Whereas Credelio Cat, they are willing participants. They're eager to have it. It's just a nice opportunity for, you know, that positive interaction with the pet parent and their cat, and to provide this product. And it's very effective, and it works very quickly too. So it's a great product.
No, it's awesome to hear. But, you know, we also have the other obstacle too in our profession, Dr. Herron, is cat parents are saying, you know, no, they're indoors or whatnot. My cat is strictly kept indoors. And there's no need to have them on an external parasite prevention. So what are your thoughts on that notion?
Yeah, I mean, and I can remember those conversations. I remember as a new grad, I had a cat come in with some dermatitis. And I'm, you know, looking through with my comb and I find some flea dirt and I, you know, put my saline on it, turns around. It's like, oh, that's flea dirt. And I was excited. Oh, this is easy. I can fix this. We're going to treat it. We're going to get prevention. It'll be fine. And the look on their face when I told them their cat had fleas, I mean, it was like I told them they were know, dirtiest hoarder ever on this planet, right? Like, oh, I don't have fleas in my house. No. We're very clean. We don't have fleas. And I thought, oh, I need to check my communication skills here a little bit. And I had to really talk about how, you know what? Cats are very sensitive. And some cats, it just takes one flea bite to put them in a huge dermatological crisis, right? Where they're itchy and scabby and losing all of their hair. We get the, you know, lost the pants, hair loss that can occur with just one flea bite. And it just takes one little flea hitching a ride on our, you know, our shoe or our pant leg, and it's going to seek out the warm, fuzzy beings in our house, right? So it doesn't want to stick on us. It's looking for the cats. And so I think it's important, you know, even though cats are not going outdoors, those fleas still have access to them, and it can just take one bite to send them into a crisis, and as well as to transmit diseases.
Yeah, whole boatload of diseases, as we know. So yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about, you know, what administration looks like for the oral option for cats. In other words, like, what makes Credelio Cat or
Lotilaner
administration different than pilling a cat in general?
Yeah. And so it actually has an official check mark being easy to give from icatcare.org. And so it's been tested as far as client administration, as well as cat. So the smell and the flavor has been tested. So there's this vanilla yeast combination that tested compared to dozens of other flavors. So cats actually picked the flavoring here. And it's small, you know, the smaller cat is 5 millimeters. So it's very, very tiny. It's in smell. You have to remember with cats, smell is a huge part of appetite, right? Cats that aren't smelling well are not going to eat well. And so you've got to have an appealing smell in order to get them interested. And like I said, with my own cat, who's often very, very finicky, the second she smelled this, was immediately interested in eating it. So if there's something to the smell and the flavoring for them, plus the small size. But even for our larger kitties, so our larger size is 7.5 millimeters. And so it's still, for a larger cat, it's still a reasonable amount.
I understand it has over a 99.5 acceptance rate, which is amazing.
Yes, it's really cool. It's really, really cool.
It really is.
I believe it.
Yeah. So, you know, I think when I'm in the exam room, like before this came out and, you know, just pilling, when we talk about pilling cats in general, let's talk about, for example, hyperthyroid cats, and I have to get them on a pill, and I would always give them an option, but we have compounding, whatnot. So what is it when, you know, when we're discussing Credelio Cat as an oral flea and tick preventative, what's the best way to respond to a pet parent that may have some reservations or even misconceived notions about pilling their cat?
Yeah, and I have this conversation with, you know, as a behaviorist, if we're, you know, we often will use psychopharmacology for cats quite a bit. And so we have this conversation. There's a huge sort of psychological barrier in some cases. Sometimes it is rude. I mean, I have some cats that won't eat anything but hard food. There are some cats that are more challenging than others, but usually we can find a way to get them to eat it on their own. So there is no stress involved, and particularly with something so easy as this, because it's small, it smells really good and tastes really good. So most of your cats are going to eat this over any other medications. But what I find is that I have a lot of cats where the parents are, they're wanting to go right to the transdermal version of a medication. And I say, well, you know, the bioavailability is not necessarily there. It's stressful. Like to apply a substance, you know, particularly these, you know, they evaporate, the alcohol vehicle in them evaporates very quickly, which feels very unusual to cats. And we know cats are very sensitive, right? Cats, you know, I see cats with petting related aggression all the time, because if you start to touch them beyond their head, they're getting very upset about it and can become aggressive. So imagine then we have to part fur and we have to apply a substance that makes them feel weird, and they can't groom, they can't reach it, they can't scratch it. So to me, that's stressful, even for the cat, where let's say they are not willing to eat this and we do have to pill them with a pill gun. That is an instantaneous, very quick, can be immediately followed up with their favorite treat. So I feel like that is less stressful than applying something topical. But again, every cat is an individual, and there are some cats that they're going to need the topical option for them. And I am the first one to admit that there's never a one size fits all. I just think this is a one size fits most situation.
I like that a lot. And I love the fact that we have these options now, at least for our pets, you know, even dogs and cats for the matter, you know, so it's just like really great. I love that.
And another reason why we want our clients in the room so we can talk about what's the best for your individual cat, whether that's an oral, whether that's a topical, let's have that conversation and make that decision together. So the client has that buy-in and they're more likely to be compliant going forward.
I always say that our clients and our patients are always VIP, and it's not everyone's important. So the I now stands for individualized. So when we're talking about telling me about like how difficult or challenges they may have with putting a topical on versus a pill, let's talk about these things, you know? Right. So it's customized care, which I love. So this is fantastic.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, Dr. Megan Herron, thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing this insightful information with our listeners.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. We want to give a special thank you again to Elanco for sponsoring this wonderful podcast. Don't forget to rate this episode, and we'll see you next time right here on the Vet Blast podcast. Take care, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay possum.